Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hey, don't forget. The annual MCAN conference is going to happen at Northeastern University on March 5th. The conference has a big number of workshops and speakers talking about clean energy, climate change, issues, skills, and great opportunities to network. Go to localenvironmentalaction.org to sign up. Now's your chance. Don't miss it. Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of February 7th, 2017. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Very well, D.R. So, D.R., a couple of weeks ago, we talked about Gandhi and direct action a little bit, little hints of it. Turns out that this week some big news came, and I will try and describe the circumstances and let you, DR, tell us what happened. But up in the state of Washington, I guess, right? Skagit, Willamette, Washington. Within the last year, a guy named Ken Ward participated in a direct action. What they did, in collaboration with several other activists, was to essentially break into the valve house for an oil pipeline and closed all the safety valves, or closed the valves, and then called the pipeline company, said that they had shut everything down and they were waiting to be arrested, right? Mm-hmm. And they broke in with direct action. It was these people all got arrested. And one in particular, Ken Ward, who has some history here in Massachusetts, because he was one of the guys who was on the lobster boat down in Rhode Island a couple years ago. Ken Ward got arrested. He was put on trial. And in fact, what they did, because they closed the pipes and potentially put people at risk, right, because it's an oil pipeline, which is a question I have about the whole thing, but put that aside for a minute. They went after the guy with a felony charge that might have carried a 30-year conviction. Mm-hmm. And then Ken Ward did something, proceeded in his legal defense to do something that you and I have talked about on several shows now, something called the necessity defense, saying that he had to turn off that pipeline because it was the only way to stop global warming, basically, or to try and get the government to react. So, D.R., with all that background, tell me what happened up in the state of Washington this past week that's of interest to climate hawks.
Well, after 5 hours of deliberation, according to EcoWatch, Ward's trial ended in a hung jury. At least one juror refused to convict. The judge officially declared it a mistrial. This was after the judge decided not to allow the necessity defense, and the judge basically sort of prattled a lot of denialism, science denialism. There will be a decision shortly on the part of the prosecutor as to whether he'll plan to do a new trial. Ken Ward noted that he didn't contest a single piece of the evidence when presented his story and evidence of catastrophic climate change, so he considered it a tremendous outcome that it ended in a hung jury. And again, it is very, very interesting because once it sort of came out how scornful the judge appeared to be of the plaintiff in this case, it seemed that his conviction was a foregone conclusion. But obviously enough members of the jury didn't buy the notion that he was guilty for that to be in fact a foregone conclusion.
Right. So, man, there's a lot there to unpack, right? There is So what you're saying is that the judge in the case told Ken Ward, the defendant, that he would not get to use the necessity defense. And, of course, the necessity defense, if you say that you turn the pipeline off because of global warming, mm-hmm. and the judge allows you to proceed with that defense, then you get to bring in all of the experts, all of the climate mm-hmm. scientists to make the case in court that climate change is real, right? Mm-hmm. He didn't get to do that. But even without presenting that evidence, the jury acquitted him. Not acquitted mm-hmm. him. They did not convict him, right?
Yep.
I mean, that's
yep.
a profound kind of turn of events, right? I mean, that says that mm-hmm. there was enough sympathy in the jury without any arguments beforehand. They came in with enough sympathy to not mm-hmm. convict the guy, right?
I do wonder if the jury simply felt that he was being overcharged, that he was facing three felony charges and one misdemeanor, and maybe they felt that this was sort of a sort of prosecutorial overreach or prosecutorial overzealousness, and from that perspective, they decided not to convict in any capacity. Perhaps if they had charged him with something lesser, and he wasn't facing 30 years in prison, they might have said, okay, you get something, but we understand why you did it. But it just looked like I think some jurors might have decided that the sentence that he was facing was so draconian that they could not go along with that in any capacity.
Well, I think that one of the things we've said on the show as it relates to this necessity defense thing is that the defense looks indefensible, I guess, or weak, and you keep mm-hmm. losing cases until you start winning cases, right? This is mm-hmm. the second time that Ken Ward has been in court, and basically second time he's tried for a climate direct action. And in both cases, the case was thrown out of court because people had sympathy, right? Here in mm-hmm. in the Massachusetts area, the district attorney said they were right. He wasn't going to prosecute the case. It was Mr. Sutter, I think, 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And here you have the jury throwing having a mistrial. But I think it's progress. I mean, mm-hmm. regardless, whatever reason they did it, and I think you're right, I mean, 30 years is a long time, mm-hmm. still in all, they won, and so that's a mm-hmm. good thing. Right?
And we have to note a bit of hypocrisy here, because I think we've noted before how everybody who got all worked up about Marilyn Mosby allegedly being an overzealous prosecutor in Baltimore when she charged the cops involved in the Freddie Gray case, mm-hmm. all of a sudden they seem to be quiet about this apparent case of prosecutorial overzealousness. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's sort of like, it's like they're picking and choosing what to be outraged by. If you're outraged again about prosecutorial overzealousness, be outraged about it all the time, not in certain circumstances.
And I agree with you. I mean, the consistency of the principled conservative, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have friends who are Tenth Amendment, stalwart Tenth Amendment people, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I have a feeling that they're going to roll over and let Scott Pruitt stop California from exercising its own clean air rules, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it
mm-hmm.
doesn't comport with their general philosophy, so they can abandon their principles. But
exactly.
I won't throw any more friends under the bus. I mean, good on Ken Ward. We'll keep an eye. He probably will get retried, but it's a great step forward.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
So the other, I don't know what the right word is, monumental thing is, happened this week. But before we get to this other monumental thing, which will be the immigration topic, I just want to observe that our new president keeps signing executive orders that are in large print in a big leather book, and he holds it up as if mm-hmm. he's king of the world, and that he
yeah.
has signed an executive order to cause crabgrass to not grow anymore, and
mm-hmm.
he signed an executive order that says, there'll be no snow after 8 o'clock in the morning kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right? That is all theater, but the nasty part of it is that it somehow is this attempt, even if it's not conscious, because mm-hmm. Donald Trump's a showman, but he wants you to think that he is king and that he
yeah.
can do these things. And that when he signs this thing with the big Donald Trump, that all of a sudden, the world's changed, and that somehow no one can challenge it. And you have to look at that and laugh at this guy as if he's the Wizard of Oz, because he's just mm-hmm. a small man, a president signing a document that then has to go through legal review, right? Am I crazy on that point?
I think he must think that he's Charlton Heston holding up, tablets in the Ten Commandments or something.
Yeah, so anyway, so let's just say next time you see Donald Trump sign a big order, because today I heard he went to the prayer breakfast or something, and he said he was going to destroy the law that keeps religious people from talking about politics and retaining their tax, that he was going to destroy it. And as if, wait a minute, you're not king. You can't destroy any laws, you clown. So you have to keep that in mind. Okay, having said that, Friday night, President Trump threw a hand grenade into the immigration process of the United States by signing off this horrible order that essentially it's a Muslim ban, right? It's been through the course of the week, there's all kinds of talk about, is it a ban, is it not, yada, yada, yada. But let's face it, it's a ban on Muslims.
Yes.
And it's also, hypocritically enough, happens to exclude the Muslims that come from countries where Donald Trump has business interests. But put that aside. The point I wanted to make, this, you know, there's been plenty of digital ink spilled over the whole immigration thing. From a climate perspective, immigration is an important issue, right? When you talk about climate in the context of immigration, you have to think of it, climate, as what you would call a distal cause, a cause that is distant from the immediate thing that you actually see, right? And there is a very credible case to be made that Syrian refugees who are coming to the across Europe and is the cause of all of Donald Trump's sleepless nights, they are essentially climate refugees because of this prolonged drought in Syria that caused by climate change that forced people into the cities, which then made an already volatile situation with this Bashar al-Assad, this guy, the bad man who's in charge of the place. I mean, the drought pushed that political conflict into a fire. And now we're dealing with the consequences of that climate-driven emigration. Point being that over the next 50 years, climate is going to make a lot of other people become immigrants, right? Here in the United States, we've already had the Katrina immigrants, the climate refugees from Katrina being forced out of New Orleans, right? It's not going to get better. And the idea that the United States would put in such a draconian and wrong-headed policy instead of building world systems that support immigration that's going to happen, that is coming, right? It's just, it's craziness. And so that's why climate hawks need to be opposing this haphazardly written executive order, but in general, worrying about immigration as a global issue. Is that craziness, dear?
And Trump's actions prove something that Martin Luther King said years ago. Nothing in all the world is more dangerous than sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity. And if you think about that line in regard to what Trump is doing, both in terms of denying climate science and also trying to sort of wish away immigration, does that not validate everything Martin Luther King said in that line that I just quoted?
I tell you, the whole question of the immigration, the Muslim ban, is one that needs support. Here in the Boston area, there were huge numbers of people, right, down in front of Copley Place. We can only imagine there will be more things like that as this whirlwind, destructive whirlwind of a presidency continues. But immigration is a climate issue. Climate hawks need to fight back because it's all wrapped up in the same. All these issues are wrapped up with each other. Just as an aside, DR, I didn't. This is not on our agenda, but you talk about sincere ignorance. Our new president seems to think that Frederick Douglass is still alive. I don't know if you saw that. And all I could think of is your favorite quote from Frederick Douglass. And please tell me, what is that favorite quote?
Power concedes nothing without a demand.
That's right. So
that just shows you how clueless the president is, that you would quote Frederick Douglass when it's the people protesting Trump who are embodying what Frederick Douglass said, and yet he's citing Frederick Douglass. Well,
he said that, you know, Frederick Douglass's work's going to become, you know, he's going to keep doing great things, essentially.
And I guess from the grave.
It seems to
like
me
like a seance or something.
It's, well, you know, there's a Twitter account now at Real Frederick Douglass.
Exactly. But you get like a Ouija board and have Frederick Douglass continue to lead.
But for me, what it speaks to is the president's, you know, incurious mind that at the age of 70, he would not, and having become president of the freaking United States, would not have enough grasp of American history to know who Frederick Douglass is, right? Mm-hmm. Not that he studied him intensively, but just to have seen a picture and say, oh, yeah, I know that, I can put a face with that name. And
he probably thinks Frederick Douglass was the guy who starred in Fatal Attraction, Basic Instinct.
Well, I mean, I hope many other people, I mean, this has gone way beyond ironic laughter. I mean, this man is truly a danger. He's going to send, I don't want to go off on a, I just hope we don't send the U.S. Army in to get the bad dudes down in Mexico City. I mean, that's a whole other thing. Okay, so immigration, climate, hawks, it's an issue that needs to be taken together. Oh, and by the way, I can't leave the topic without giving a shout out to Sally Q. Yates, the bravest woman since who was Nixon's attorney general? Elliot Richardson, right? The bravest woman since Elliot Richardson. Good on her. Mm-hmm. So, DR, there's that whole thing. Other stuff happened in Washington this week that is also consequential. We had Mr. Tillerson finally get approved by the U.S. Senate. So Exxon has formally acquired the U.S. government and State Department for its purposes, right?
And yes. Interesting, with four semi-controversial votes, all Republicans voting in favor, and three Democrats, Mark Warner of Virginia, Mr. Manchin of West Virginia, Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota, and most interestingly, Angus King, the independent of Maine. And I say that's interesting because Angus King ran on a strong climate position in 2012. It appears that Mr. King might have bought into the same sort of reasoning that Elon Musk bought into when he endorsed Rex Tillerson's nomination, the idea of that if somebody claims it's not a hoax and claims to be for a carbon tax, that makes them copacetic, basically. That seems to be what appears to have been what went on there in Senator King's mind.
You know, that's what's called an excuse. But I guess the other thing for climate people to note is that Scott Pruitt, who is nothing if not an ogre when it, as far as the EPA and the Clean Power Plan comes. Scott Pruitt has cleared his Senate committee. And he cleared the Senate committee to get to the floor of the Senate because the Democrats basically did not attend out of a deliberate attempt to stall the committee because it wouldn't have a quorum. And the Republican side basically suspended the rules, which is a nice way of saying that they said, okay, we're not going to follow the rules anymore for the next 10 minutes. We're going to do this, and then we're going to put the rules back in place. They suspended the rules, put Mr. Pruitt into, passed him with a vote of 11-0, and now Mr. Scott Pruitt can proceed to the floor of the Senate. And I guess the thing that I find most troubling about it is back to the question of the Constitution and the democratic processes and precedences and the way we do business are important because right now the GOP, for them, the ends justify the means. Right? Mm-hmm. They want to put the Scott Pruitt into the EPA, and it doesn't matter how they get him there. They can break all the rules, and then at the end they've gotten their guy, and they do not recognize that the process is sacred. And that when, say, Elizabeth Warren, when she was talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, she put it well. Mm-hmm. She said that a rigged process gives you a rigged result. Right?
Yes.
And here we are. We're rigging the process in the Senate, the most famous deliberative body in the world, right? rigging the process to get to an end that the GOP wants, and that's destructive to democracy.
Isn't it ironic that after all these years of Republicans hating Warren Beatty and hating Warren Beatty's politics, they decide to operate under with the same philosophy as the title Warren Beatty's last movie, Rules Don't Apply?
Well, I mean, it's something that people need to think about and know about and appreciate. Because if you hear this report on the radio, it says, oh, yeah, they suspended the rules, now Scott Pruitt's through. All right. Mm-hmm. Suspension of the rules, that's a deep thing that they did, which is a wrong thing that they did, and mm-hmm. it calls for opposition. So I would, if you haven't called your U.S. senator, you can still call him and tell him or her or it or whatever to not vote for Scott Pruitt. I mean, he is just mm-hmm. bad news.
And Think Progress notes that there is at least one Democratic senator, Joe Manchin, who's hinting that he will vote to confirm Pruitt. So it'll be interesting to see if I won't hold my breath, but if any of the Republican senators who profess, a belief in science has a last-minute change of heart. But again, I wouldn't bet the bank on it.
I mean, there may be some people listening to this podcast who live in the state of Maine, right? Mm-hmm. Susan Collins is someone who sometimes listens to reason, right? Mm-hmm. We need to call her and convince her that Scott Pruitt doesn't belong there. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, DR, we got to leave it there. I'm sorry that I'm going to rant. It's very frustrating. I think it's frustrating to a lot of people. Anyway, what we'll say is we're going to check out, we'll put links to most of what we talked about at the blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. Of course, we're on Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can find us on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, and a bunch of other places. You can also find us on iTunes by searching for Massachusetts Climate Action. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the U.S. put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, DR, as always, thank you for being here.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. Hang in there. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time.
Very cool.